Welcome to Empowered, Mind-Body Inspiration. The mind is the map to wholeness, wellness, health. The heart is the key to genius and inspiration. Join me and my guests as we explore how to release and rewire into who you truly are, unique, whole, and empowered. Please like, share, and subscribe. Spiral up, spiral out. Welcome, Spiral Uppers. Today we have Kara Goodwin, a meditation and transformation coach, host of the meditation podcast, energy healer, and beekeeper. Welcome, Kara.
Thank you, Jane. Thanks for having me. I'll just clarify, it's the meditation conversation podcast.
Okay. Yes, I didn't really say the name. I just said a meditation podcast. So meditation conversation podcast.
Yes.
Perfect. And we can put that in the show notes too.
Perfect.
So tell me all about meditation. When did it start in your life? And then, you know, meditation is a mystery to a lot of people. So maybe you can take some of the mystery out of it.
Yeah, for sure. So meditation became a big part of my life to help get me through a really difficult time. A few years ago, I just had a series of calamities and my life just started like crumbling, it felt like. And so it began with the sudden death of my sister-in-law. And 3 weeks later, our dog died. And like a month or 6 weeks or so after that, my stepdad had to have a delicate operation on his brainstem. He was deteriorating prior to that. And then shortly after that, my mother-in-law was hit by a motorbike as she crossed the street, and she was in recovery in the hospital for a long time for that, mourning the death of her daughter. From just a couple of months before that. And then a couple of months later, maybe 3 months later, my stepmom was in the ICU and had a heart transplant as a result from that. So all of that was happening while my husband and two children and I were living in Italy. And my in-laws live in England and my family is in America. So all of this is happening to these people who are like huge, huge parts of our lives and tragedy after tragedy. And we are also on top of all of that, we weren't with them. So there's an added element of helplessness with that. So all of that to say that my life just really became, it just became very difficult. And I just got to the point where it was like, okay, I've got to do something because I don't know how to cope with this. It's kind of like the phone would ring and that would like trigger, you know, a PTSD, you know, effect or something like that. Because every time my phone rang, you know, usually when people just text, right? So when my phone would ring, it was like constantly this terrible news. And so I had been drawn to meditation prior to that, where I just was curious about it. And, you know, if I ran across an article citing meditation, I would definitely click on it because it just always seemed like there was something there. But like you mentioned, it's kind of a mystery. And so I had tried meditation on my own and not really felt anything, not really known what I was doing. So even though it felt like this super cool, like key to unlock, like a, you know, something deep within my life, I didn't get anywhere with it when I would just sit down and try not to think. And so it became this, like, I felt that it was a very critical tool for me at that time. And so, and I knew that because I had tried it in the past and not felt anything interesting with it and not wanted to stick with it, I was like, well, I need to do more than just try it, you know, just to try not to think. I need a teacher. And so I sort of put that out into the universe, not really even truly believing that there was any sort of force that was going to like help me do anything with that desire. But I was like, all right, universe, I think I need meditation. I think I need somebody to really help me to like establish a practice and know what I'm doing. And so if that's correct, you do that, you know, send me what I need. And I did find there were a series of synchronicities from that where I did eventually and fairly rapidly find really effective methods with a teacher. And I was able to create a lasting practice. And that is for, that was for me, what really took the mystery out of it. Because again, just kind of going, okay, this is something that everybody can do. It, you know, it's just this innate part of us. We just sit down and we don't think. That again, it didn't lead me anywhere. So to take that mystery out of it, I found that I really needed a method or a series of methods. I needed something predictable. And the approach that I learned that I now teach, it is very methodical. Is that the right word? How do you say that? But you know, it's like, let's start with the breath and then let's work on really relaxing the body. And then let's watch the breath and let that be a point of focus for us to try to keep the mind focused. And then we can go into like a visualization or affirmations or, you know, some type of more expansive part to our meditation. And that's a very simplistic way to describe kind of what I needed, which was here's step one. And then from let's practice that. And then let's, you know, add in another element or another step, you know, slowly and gradually. And let's just start with 5 minutes and get really comfortable with that. And once we've like really gotten good with that, let's go to 6 minutes. You know, it's like, let's not just try to, you know, sit down and do an hour and get frustrated and, you know, feel like we're drowning in our thoughts, you know? Yeah. So that was why I came to meditation. And that was how I demystified it, was through having a more systematic approach to it, which came from, you know, the learning that I had, the teacher that I had, who was great at making it more systematic and more of a science-y kind of approach to it.
Yeah. Because when we're in these anxious states, it's hard to even sit still, right? So, and deep breathing is often such an important first step because it calms the sympathetic nervous system so that then you can get to the next step. So were you feeling that in your body, a lot of anxiety? And then you're very jittery, right? It's hard to even sit still.
Yeah. Yeah. I have been fortunate to not really be historically a very anxious person. So that jitteriness was not a cross that I personally had to bear, but it is very common of like, how do I just sit here? But you're absolutely right. The breath is like this gateway to helping us to connect with the calmness that's within us. And so that is, you know, there's specific breath work that we can do that helps to trigger the body into that state of calmness to get us out of that fight or flight. So that's been a really key element to my practice. Is, I mean, breath work is a huge part of what I personally do every day. And it's, I don't know that I've ever led a meditation and not used the breath in some way. It's so critical.
Yeah. So how did you experience these really difficult situations? And then every time the phone rang, like what made you know, okay, I've got to recalibrate what's going on inside of me?
Well, it really was just this day by day, you know, as another, you know, brick kind of came slamming down at that period of time. It was like, because my family and I were living in Italy, and that was an amazing experience. I had stopped working to go there. I had worked, you know, a corporate job. I had two young kids, and my husband got this opportunity in Italy. And so I stopped working at that time, and so that I could take care of the kids while we were abroad. And it was amazing. And I had such a wonderful time. But I do feel like, looking back, before everything started falling apart, that I was sort of coasting on the surface of life. Like, I was having a great time. I would love, you know, I'd drop the kids off at school and I'd meet my friends for a cappuccino, you know, in the morning. And we might sit there for an hour and just chat. And then I'd go to the grocery store and, you know, I'd just kind of putz around for a while and then go pick them up and to do their after school stuff. And it was just this, it was really, really pleasant. It was really fun. But looking back, it was like this, you know, I was just kind of coasting. And there really wasn't a lot of, I mean, I was getting pushed a lot personally, just in terms of the language and the culture and assimilating to not having my family around. I mean, there was a lot of like growth in that area, but, you know, from like a purpose, like purposeful existence, it really was just sort of a coasting time. And so it really, you know, looking back, it does seem like that series of events happening in such a close succession, was really a wake up call for me. You know, it was, even though each of these tragedies, it didn't personally happen to me, you know, I wasn't the one that was actually having the accidents or having the surgeries or whatever, but these are very, very important people in my life. So it definitely affected me. But it was kind of like, from my personal perspective, it was, you know, one thing after another to these really key people in my life. And that was kind of like okay, it's time to really connect with something deeper and stop like just coasting, you know?
Yeah.
It was just a, does that make sense?
Oh yeah. Well, it's interesting how life creates just enough that we look for solutions, which is so important, right? Like, we all kind of want to coast.
Yeah.
It's so fun.
Yeah.
But we don't grow at those times.
Yes, right? Exactly. And it has its place. I mean, I don't want to necessarily go from like, you know, one really difficult mountain to climb to immediately the next mountain to climb. I mean, there is so much growth that we get through it, and they can be hugely expansive experiences. And there is definitely something to be said for having periods of coasting and just like recollecting ourselves and like breathing and feeling secure and, you know, all of those great things that come with it. So it can't just be like, in my opinion, it can't just be like expand, 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 expand. Like, sometimes like expand now, just pause, integrate.
Yeah, that's the best. Right?
Yeah. And, you know, kind of let those come in waves, but with some like respite.
Yeah. So you talked about the importance of breathing in meditation as a first step. And then what else, where else do you take people? I know that you write or you talk about that memories are stored in the body. Mm-hmm. What do you mean by that?
Well, I personally have had some metaphysical experiences, we can say, where my consciousness has just sort of gone into a different experience beyond this physical realm. Often it reminds me, like, I don't know, have you ever seen The Simpsons?
A little bit.
Okay. Every once, like, I know that there have been a few episodes that are like very trippy, like somebody's taken LSD or something like that. And they show, you know, like the scenes, like morphing, like all these shapes morphing into other things. And I've never taken LSD, but those kinds of things are familiar, because this is sort of the thing that will start to happen where it does feel like what you would consider trippy. And it's this just like feeling myself more as consciousness, but not confined to my physical body. And a couple of times I've had experiences within that where I have recognized that I'm holding memories like in my body. And I had heard of that as like more of a theoretical thing, or, you know, there are different like modalities of energy work, emotional healing work, where, you know, they've talked about energies being trapped in the body as emotions or whatever. The way that I actually experienced it was through one of those kind of spontaneous experiences, kind of a metaphysical experience. And the one that comes to mind is I experienced seeing like a person. So it was like a human form that was laying down, and it was like these slices of, it was like a one human form, but it was made up of all these different slices of a human. And I understood that we are, it's, that's a symbol of how our bodies are working, in that we have these like layers within us, and they can be, you know, different experiences that we've had, different, it could even be different lifetimes that we've had, and they're all contained within our one human form, but they're kind of like layers within us. And if we have experienced some sort of trauma and we haven't like processed it, so it's still there and we're still holding it in that layer, and it's not just affecting that one layer because they're all kind of stacked on top of each other. So if we're holding, for example, in the one experience that I'm talking about, I was like, oh, I store, just bear with me here. I store my dad in my right arm. And it was just like, my dad came to, like, my dad was there, like in my mental field or whatever, and my awareness was in my right arm. And I was like, oh, my dad is in my right arm. It's like, that's where my dad, like where I store my dad. And then also Wolf came to my awareness, and it was in a very similar place. And I was like, oh, that's interesting. So I carry my dad like in the area of somewhere in my right arm. And I also carry Wolf there. And I don't know if it's like they have some sort of connection, or if I just have connected them, and I don't really know what that connection is, like with my conscious mind, because my dad doesn't really have anything to do with wolves that I'm aware of. I mean, he loves dogs, but maybe there are different attributes that, you know, he's a protector. I don't know. But anyway, it was like, oh, okay. So they're stored very close together. So there is something within my consciousness where they're kind of, they're related somehow, like beyond my conscious awareness. And I also could see that. So another thing that came at this, in this specific experience, was one of my friends came to my awareness, and she had I knew that she was dealing with this like blockage in her throat, or like she kept going to these different people and they were like, your throat chakra is blocked, or you need clearing in your throat. Like there was always all this attention in her throat. And she was like, what is up with that? Like, what does that mean? What do I do about it? And so she kind of came into my awareness. And then I saw this, it was like, I don't know, from the Middle Ages, like between 1400 and 1600. And it was this like huge manor house in Great Britain. And she was this, like, she worked in the kitchen of this manor house. And she was like this heavy set woman, and she had a bonnet and it wasn't tied. And she went into what, in my awareness, it was like, she's gone into the larder, which is not a word I would use. Being Canadian, you might be more familiar with the word larder.
Kind of. Yeah. It's a place to store food.
Yeah. It's like, but I would say pantry. Like it's it's not a, I mean, I'm aware of this word, but I don't know that I'd ever used that word before.
Yeah.
But I was like, oh, she's going in the larder. And then I saw like somebody come in with like a butcher knife. And I knew that she, that were, those were the final moments of her life. And like she, her neck had been cut from that. And so, and I don't know if this was actually like a real past life that she had, or if it was just a symbol, like a you know, a, another way that my consciousness was like trying to understand what was unfolding with this, these layers of a human form, you know, and how it all worked together. But what I understood from that was because that happened at the end of her life, it, she didn't get a chance to really process it. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like it happened and she, and that form of her died from it. And so she still had this trauma in her being because it was one of the layers within her. And that trauma hadn't had a chance to be like released because it hadn't been processed. And so that was the cause, or that would be an example of what could cause a mysterious kind of throat chakra blockage. Does that make sense?
Yes. It's really interesting, isn't it? Like,
yeah.
Yeah. Like we're just so much more than we think. And the whole, like we've been on so many journeys and right. When a life ends with trauma, mm-hmm. you know, we must come back wanting to clear that or holding that energy. It just makes sense to me that that would happen. Yeah. And so when she learned of it, was she able to clear it?
You know, I think it's an ongoing thing because I was really hesitant to say, oh my goodness, this is what happened. So you just need to know that this happened. You need to accept it. You need to release it. You know, I was pretty clear to say, like, it's hard for me to tell if this was just a symbol and it was like a way for my consciousness to try to teach me something. I don't know that it was like a literal thing. I mean, there were weird things about it, like the fact that like her, the figure that she was looked nothing like her today. And the larder thing was like caught my attention. But again, it was like, I don't know for sure that it was like an you know, total cause and effect thing. So she's had ongoing like work where she's trying to untangle what's going on with her throat, but
yeah. And it does take that untangling, doesn't it?
Yeah.
But just shining some light on it. On that,
right.
You know, a kind of that unconscious or storage that we have just no, sometimes you have no idea where it came from.
Yeah, exactly. Because it could be that it's not really even in this lifetime, or it could be that it was something buried from our childhood that we don't even remember. Our subconscious stores so much. And so those things can be released. And one of the things that can happen in meditation is that your memories do start to come back. You know, there are things that just pop in. Sometimes I get some really random things that just come in. Like I'll be in my third grade classroom and it's not that something traumatic has happened, but it's something I haven't thought about in decades. And it's suddenly like, it's like I'm there in my class, you know, like reading about Helen Keller or something. And it doesn't seem relevant. It doesn't seem pertinent. And so it's just interesting how these things can start to kind of float up where things that we've stored in the subconscious, like slowly can begin to become part of our conscious awareness again. And it's almost like I don't know who to credit with this. It wasn't my metaphor, but where, you know, you've got an iceberg. And if you're looking at it from water level, you can just see, you know, the top of the iceberg. But if you can see underneath it, you've got this huge iceberg underneath it. You know, it's way bigger than what's popping out of the water. And our conscious awareness, meaning what we are aware of in this moment and what memories we hold and the things that consciousness is basically awareness. So it's like, if you're aware of it, you're experiencing it through your consciousness, but that's just the tip of the iceberg that's coming out of the water. When you can see what's under the water, that's the subconscious. That's all the things that you don't, that you're not consciously aware of, which includes the physiological stuff. So often when we're breathing, we're doing it subconsciously, blinking, beating the heart, digestion, circulation, you know, all of those enzyme processing and hormones and everything. Like, we don't have to think about that. But it is still happening, and the subconscious is taking care of it. But all of the memories that we don't, you know, that we're not consciously aware of, the traumas that we haven't processed yet, that we've like stuffed away, they're still there. They're in the subconscious. And there are things like meditation, which help to lower the waterline. So it's like the things that we have not been aware of, we uncover them more and more. And it's not, you can try to do it, but it's also a byproduct, you know, where it's like, oh, just through that, like expanding my awareness and being more aware, working on that, working with my consciousness and becoming more connected to all the parts of myself, you know, it helps to lower that waterline so that more and more is exposed and there's less that's kind of hidden. And if we expose it, then we have more control over it. We have, you know, we're exposing it. We're able to process it. We can work with it. It's much easier to work with what we know rather than, you know, the things that are hidden.
Yeah. In my teaching, we learn a lot about the unconscious mind as well. And like what you're speaking of, all those things that happen in our body, they're like the automatic mind. So everything that happens within us is happening automatically. And then there's these triggers in the unconscious that affect that automatic mind. And of course it's connected to everything in our body. And Divya would describe it, the conscious and the unconscious mind, is having a wall between them, because that's the protection from all of our unconscious spilling over.
Oh, yeah.
Right? But to reach that unconscious, you need to lower that wall so that you can become aware of the things that need to be healed. So
yeah,
meditation, meditation would be one of the things that you could do.
Yeah.
To become aware. Yeah. So what else do you teach? Like, so just take some more of the mystery out of meditation.
Well, it's funny because meditation, you know, is such a great tool, in terms of just stilling ourselves and getting more in touch with who we are. And there's so much that we can do outside of meditation as well, that help us to understand where some of our motivations come from. You know, a lot of that work with what is often called the ego versus, you know, our higher self or our true self, you know, there are lots of ways to say it, but that recognizing that the physical aspect of us, the body, and then the personality that goes with that body, and the emotions that go with that body, everything that is like organic and physical and, well, I mean, emotions aren't physical, but everything that is, you know, temporary, that's here, you know, that wasn't here before we were born and then won't be here after we die. That's, you know, that temporary part of us that it is often in, especially in the East, called, the ego. And so much of what we are doing when we aren't conscious, you know, when we don't have that greater awareness, it's actually the motivations are coming from the ego. And so then we have this eternal part of ourselves. We have the one that is animating that, you know, humanness of us, but it's something bigger. And we can become cut off from that, where we, you know, and especially in the West, where, you know, we don't really recognize that eternal element in our mainstream culture. You know, it's not, we're not learning about that in school. And in fact, a lot of times it's suppressed in school, you know, where it's just very like, it's just about the physical world. It's about the science. It's about the, you know, the data. And there's a place for that, but it's become so extreme that we, that so many people are walking around like completely disconnected from that eternal nature that they are. And as such, they're living as very separate beings. They don't see their impact and their interconnectedness. And I personally think that that is a vital, vital element of life, you know. And I think that that when we don't have that, that is where a lot of the mental anguish is coming from, that disconnected state where we, you know, we're only seeing ourselves as this physical thing, you know, this temporary thing, and we don't feel that there's purpose or that there is, you know, anything eternal or any kind of purpose is the big one for me, you know, where I'm like, when we don't feel that there is purpose, that really puts us in direct contrast with, you know, universal truth and universal law. So it really is this, becoming more, you know, meditation helps with this, but it can happen, you know, outside of meditation too, where we just start to understand ourselves from a different perspective and understand, like, is this motivation coming from my little ego? You know, is it what I really want? Is it really going to make me happy? You know, because there is a big difference between the things that the ego thinks it wants and our level of happiness. Because if, for example, the ego is like, well, I really need a Maserati. Like, this is the key to my happiness. And so if we're so driven from an ego perspective for that Maserati, there may be a lot of things that we have to give up in terms of like our ethics or, you know, our connections or something. You know, we may need to, even if we're able to do that, you know, from a lawful way, it could take like, okay, I've got to work like every waking hour and not build relationships or nurture relationships, and it's all about money. You know, that doesn't feed our soul. And we see examples of this time and time again with people who have endless resources and they're miserable. And so it's really, you know, coming into this greater experience and perspective of who we are and what really makes us happy, and coming into this greater realization that we are more than the temporary vehicle. And if we are seeing things from that perspective, it can change our motivations. You know, it can redirect us to value things that actually are going to give us greater purpose, greater happiness, greater joy, and give us a more fulfilling life. And I don't know that there's anything that's more important than feeling that we're living a purposeful life.
Yeah, beautifully said. I mean, often the ego mind is what creates such fear and death too, isn't it? And
yeah,
you know, just realizing, it's through meditation, and that takes some practice and it takes some work, but it's through that quiet of the mind that you get these, like you've had these experiences where there's no denying that we're more than flesh and blood.
Right. Yeah, absolutely.
So that would be one of the main reasons to meditate, do you think?
Yeah.
It's really important.
Yeah. It is. I mean, really, it's for me, it's just funny because there are so many people, you know, they want, I'll come across people all the time. Oh man, I wish I could be calmer. I wish I could be, you know, more, I get a lot of like, if just, you know, if I'm hanging out with people, a lot of times it's not unusual, I'll say, for somebody to be like, gosh, you're so calm. And I feel calm around you. And it's so often, you know, oh, I really wish I could feel like this, you know, regularly. And it's funny because so many people want that, but they want it to just be this thing that happens. And, you know, we do have tools like meditation, which actually nurture that within us and help us build that muscle to be able to be calm, you know, like just like what you were saying about the breath and the nervous system, you know, these repeated practices help to change our default state so that we do, you know, we go from feeling anxious all the time, feeling stressed all the time, to understanding the physiological effects of our breath, for example, and what that does to our psychology, our mental state, our energy levels. And it really physically changes us and it changes our levels of calmness. And it's a palpable thing that other people can sense and it can rub off on them. And it's accessible to everybody. But it also takes work. You know, it takes the choice to do it. So it's funny because I know that a lot of people have the desire, like they really, really recognize that it's missing from their lives. But then there's the next step of actually taking the steps to change. And that's where a lot of people, they miss that step. You know, they just have the desire, but they don't want to take, they don't want to change anything. Yeah. They're like, I really want that. Where's the magic wand? And it's like, it's there, but you also need to like wave it.
Yeah. And I love how you describe it as a muscle, because once you have created that muscle, you know when you're out of balance, you know when you're not in that kind of calm state, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So if someone is listening to this right now and wanted to go meditate, can you lead them just through the simplest exercise so they could get started?
Yeah, absolutely. I personally recommend, if you're just starting out, just find a nice, comfortable seated position, close your eyes, and it might help to put your hands on your belly just to have a reference point, but just spend like 2 minutes breathing down into your belly to where as you inhale, you can feel your belly expanding outwards with your inhale. So you know that that breath is going all the way down to your tummy. And as you exhale slowly, you can relax the belly back toward the spine. And just do that for like 2 minutes. And then just keep your eyes closed and just notice how you feel. Like, you don't have to label it. You don't have to put words to it. You just notice, like, just how does your body feel? How does your mind feel? And that is a great place to begin because it's such a quick hit. Go ahead.
And how much time do you suggest breathing in and breathing out?
I would do it if you're just starting out, just try 2 minutes, you know, because it can really help
Two minutes, but I mean, how many counts in and how many counts out?
Oh, you could just do like a four count. And if it feels right, then, you know, after a few, you know, four counts, then try five. And then if that feels right, you know, you can try six. Mm-hmm. If you're just starting out, I would say it's really less about like being too dogmatic about like it's specific, you know, you don't want to have to try to really stretch yourself. For some people, they could do a six count right away. For others, that's going to be like crazy talk. But, and from there, you know, do that a few times. And if you want to go further, which, you know, it's great to build it up. I think guided meditations can be another great asset. And just finding like a 5-minute guided meditation, again, not trying like, because more, yes, it can be better. Like for me, a 5-minute meditation is not going to be as effective as a longer meditation, just for me personally, but I've been doing it for a long time. But when I was just starting, if I were to try to do a 20-minute meditation, it's just way too much. So just starting short, you know, quick hits, just trying to keep, because it's amazing how quickly those thoughts will come in and you'll get on the thought train and be like, wait a minute, I didn't want these thoughts, you know, and then you had to bring your awareness back and it's okay. That's part of the training. But guided can definitely assist too, because then you're just sort of like, you're getting yourself there, but somebody's helping to pave the way for you.
Yeah. And it gives you something to focus on.
Exactly.
Yeah. But I love that simplicity of just the breathing at first.
Yeah.
So Kara, how do people find more of you?
Well, thank you. I have a website, karagoodwin.com. That's Kara with a K. And I do have a free guided meditation that people can go to. It's right there on the website. You just put your email in and it'll go straight to your inbox. That one's a 10-minute meditation, but it's still, if you're a beginner, I would still give it a go. Because again, it's heavily guided. So that can be so instrumental. And I have other resources too. I have a 21-day program. You don't have to do it consecutive days. People tend to just, you know, do it 21 lessons, but those have video accompaniment, and there are audio meditations, lots of guided meditations in there. And that's a great foundational course where you get like, you know, how do I sit and how long and what are some breathing techniques and lots of different exposure in there. And then I have the podcast, as we mentioned, the meditation conversation. So I've had a lot of great conversations in there too. And I'm on Instagram at Kara_Goodwin_meditation.
Beautiful. And I'll share all those links in the show notes. Thank you so much, Kara. That was incredible information.
Thank
you. Inspiring.
Oh, good. I've really enjoyed being here with you. Thank you so much.
And remember, don't give away your power to anyone else. Be the creator of your own life. You can find more inspiring episodes on 14 different platforms, including iTunes, Spotify, and empoweredhealth.com. Be a part of Thrive Tribes. Be the change in Thrivevolution at thrivetribehub.com. And join me and my fellow changemakers at Health Tribe, Body, Mind, and Soul on Facebook. Spiral up, spiral out.